Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Can there ever be a lasting peace in Ukraine and Europe as long as Kyiv's backers only want continued conflict? The West has the wrong priorities. It is looking to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. Instead, peace will return when security is guaranteed for all. Crosstalking the search for peace, I'm joined by my guest, General Paul Vallely in Big Fork. He is chairman of the Stand Up America U.S. Foundation. In Reston, we have Michael Maloof. He is a former Pentagon senior security policy analyst. And in Cambridge, we cross to Dr. Deepthi Bishti. She is the founder of UNIT, which is a defense intelligence organization based in the U.K. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to the General Paul in Big Fork. You're a military man. You know how wars start. You know how they're fought. And I'm sure you would agree with me, wars should never be fought if you can avoid it. But here we are. And we're, what, 15, 16 months into the conflict with no possible outcome on the horizon. In your professional experience, General, where do we go from here?
Well, Peter, sane minds have to prevail. This is getting beyond ridiculous to continue this insane war over there in Ukraine. Last year, we formed an international alliance called the Patriots International Alliance. That really was a focus on COVID and the boosters and the vaccines and all of that. But then we transitioned, as we talked to other members throughout basically Europe and down to Australia. And so we decided to refocus on the Ukraine-Russia conflict, and we have now set in motion a peace summit conference to be held in the Mediterranean in August with some 30 delegates. So we want to pull the key people and influencers that can bring some sanity and end this conflict. And I think it's in the best interest not only of Ukraine and Russia, but also the other countries that are involved, now even China. When you look around the entire world, this conflict has really upset the entire globe, so to speak. So it's got to end. There's got to be a cessation. There's
okay,
no
well,
doubt about it.
Let's go to the doctor in Cambridge. Doctor, the biggest problem, I suppose, in conflict resolution is the element of trust. Obviously, there is no trust here. You know the history of the conflict. If you have look at decision makers in the Kremlin, they're going to say, well, we already tried negotiating with these people, the Minsk process, and apparently they were deceitful and they lied and it was a cover. Okay, how do we overcome that barrier? And on top of that, when you have the President of the United States, you have the Secretary of Defense basically saying it's regime change in Russia that we're interested in. That is a caveat that is very difficult to get around as well. Please, Doctor, in Cambridge.
Thank you, Mr. Lavelle. You're right. I think it's a very difficult position for the Russians because it has been, openly stated that the Minsk Accord was not in good faith and that all that time was being used to actually build up a force against Russia. And then we are seeing currently, the escalated calls for genocide from the Ukrainian side. This is openly on the social media and on behalf of leading people within Ukraine. So it is a very difficult bridge to cross, yet it can be done. You know, if you get the right people together and you get the dialogue going with the initiation of recognition of what the actual problem is, then there can be a resolution, but we've got to get the right people together. And that's the first step. And it has to be done from, either we do it or any other entity does it. But we've got to get the right people together. That's the first step.
You know, Michael, in my introduction, I said that the West, NATO, has the wrong priorities. And the priority ought to be, and we knew this the December before the conflict started, is security guarantees for all, the indivisibility of security. It's not a foreign idea, by the way. That was enshrined in Helsinki in the 1970s. What happened? How have we gotten so far away from that? Because Russia's proposals or demands or ultimata, whatever you want to call it, the December before, that is a point of departure.
Well, Peter, thanks for having me. And on this topic particularly, What you outline is absolutely correct. There wasn't just one agreement. There were a half a dozen agreements on indivisibility over time from the 1990s and into the 2000s that talked about indivisibility, which defined means you do not arm the West at the expense of the East. And when the Cold War ended, NATO actually grew. It has enlarged 7 times. The Warsaw Pact, however, went away. Now, as you point out, Mr. Putin warned the United States in December of 2021, that this was a threat to national security, this encroachment. And he was ignored. He was poo-pooed. In fact, he was down. He was spoken down to, which Russians feel the Americans have notoriously done for years, rather than treat them as an equal power and with respect. That went away. And we saw that also with the NATO. And you saw Stoltenberg groping around looking for a new identity for NATO itself, for its very existence, until this episode happened. They had to create this episode in order for NATO to continue. And I think it's an institution that at all costs must survive no matter what. The cost is.
Yeah, well,
and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah, but Michael, the failure of European security, you put it at the doorstep of NATO. This is NATO's fault, okay?
And this
organization has to be disbanded, okay? We need to start all over again. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back to Big Fork. The way I look at it, General, is that there's only going to be a military solution to this, okay? Russia has incorporated regions of Ukraine that it calls its own sovereignty right now. Obviously, Crimea is the reddest of red lines right now. As much as, lady and gentlemen, I would like to see a negotiated end to it, I don't see it in the cards. Explain to me how I'm wrong, General.
Well, if you look at history, Peter, it will be solved. It's just a matter of time, and I think as the Ukrainians have suffered severe damage, and we estimate anywhere from 12 to 15 million Ukrainians have already left the country, gone to other countries.
Yep.
That whole country's going to be rebuilt. And I know the Russians see that, but they're going to protect the eastern provinces. They're part of the Federation now. That's where the settlement is. Stop there, cease the war, and let's proceed on to restoration of both what's been damaged in Russia and Ukraine. And we're not taking sides here particularly, but we see NATO that have pushed this thing to the edge, and Putin warned everybody. If President Trump was still in power in the presidency, this would have never happened. Sane minds would have prevailed, and they would have come to some agreement. But that's not the situation. So it will end soon. We think maybe in 60 days there'll be probably the right environment for a cessation of hostilities.
You know, and let's go back to our guest in Cambridge. I've been thinking over the last few weeks of always, you know, because I'm a trained historian myself, you know, and I always think to myself, how will future historians look at this? And then I caught myself thinking, I don't know if we're going to need historians. I think we need psychologists, because I don't understand the mindset. I mean, the rhetoric that's coming out of Kyiv is just, it really is pathological. I mean, it's almost, you can't talk to these people. They want to kill as many Russians as possible all over the world. I mean, they talk the language of genocide, and their Western backers are just saying, you know, oh, that's who they are. I mean, one of the problems we have in this conflict is that the West does not see the other side. I mean, Stephen Cohen, the great Stephen Cohen, always used to say that. Try to understand it from the other guy's angle. The West refuses to do that. Go ahead, my friend in Cambridge.
Thank you for that. It's true. You know, I think you're talking of resolution. Yes. So we've got to first understand the main problem here. Yes, it is NATO expansion towards the east, but then there is this whole matter of neo-Nazism, and
yes.
it's not a small matter.
Yes.
It is something that has been that on which Russia actually asked assistance from the international bodies several times and nothing was done. So, and it's been documented by Western media as well. So it is very well documented. It's well, very well, you know, demonstrated that this is the biggest issue. And today we are living at times where President Zelensky himself, Alipov and other people, they're calling for open genocide. So for the resolution, I think it's extremely important for the international community to recognize this as the central core of the problem. So and once you've got people talking with regards to real evidence as to what has been happening from 2014 onwards, increasingly so in 2021, where the shelling of Donbass was increased by the AFU, and they were targeting ethnic Russian communities, and that led to the special military operation, one of the biggest reasons for the SMO. So I think once the dialogue in the international community begins with this, there is nowhere to hide, because, you know, in the West we have the banner "Lest We Forget," for you know, coming on from the World War II.
Right.
And so people are really sensitive to that. Common people do not want this, but they don't even know that there is a problem. So I think that charade has to be, has to disappear. And common people need to really understand what really has been happening in Donbass, in the eastern parts of Ukraine.
Well, you bring up a very good point. Let me go to Michael real quickly before we go to the break here. That New York Times article that came out a few days ago is one of the most embarrassing, shameful things I've ever seen in my life. They start out by, there's a few incidences of Nazi symbols, and then the rest of the article makes it ubiquitous. 20 seconds before we go to the break, Michael. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, this has been longstanding. Bish is right. This was brought on, in fact, by neo-Nazi efforts and initiatives by the neocons within the United States to actually oppose the coup in Ukraine in 2014. And now we're seeing their influences extending all the way into the United States to this day. So it's not surprising.
Yeah, well, I call it the Ukrainianization of the West. And that'll be a topic of a separate program. We're going to go to a short break right now. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the search for peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the search for peace. Okay, let's go back to Big Fork. General, you know, I agree with you. You said earlier in the program that, you know, all conflicts come to an end. Yes, absolutely. There are different variations, and we can recall history. But In the way you look at this conflict and the way it's unclear how it will end, but it will end. How will the world have changed then? Because I don't see the sanctions being dropped against Russia at all. I think that the economic relationship that Europe had with Russia will not come back, and that will affect Europe immensely. Higher cost of living, probably deindustrialization, poorer standard of living. I mean, there's really big changes going on right now. And after Russia's had a 300-year flirtation with the West. That is over, okay? The West, through the United States, Britain to a great extent, does not want Russia part of the European architecture of security. That's a big, big change, and it has implications for Africa, Latin America, China, India, etc. Go ahead, General.
Well, the chessboard has changed completely here just in 2 to 3 years. And I can remember, I don't know whether you remember, in 2017, Michael and I met with the foreign ministry and we set up the first meeting between Putin and Trump. Now, we have an election coming up next year. We're not sure what's going to happen. We have many problems in the United States. But this whole chessboard, when you look at BRICS, when you knew the new institutional connections, the network, what I call the Eurasian or the Eastern Alliance. All of these countries now are aligning, maybe up to 40, and they'll control 2/3 of the gross national product within the next year. So we have to look at this. We have to look at a weakening of the European nations, a dismantling of America. we have these alignments going on, Peter, and I think that's what we have to focus on, and that's what the summit conference will do with our delegates, to talk about that, talk about the future, to bring about some sanity of people that can really hold their countries together and be very, very important in the future of those countries. Europe is looking at itself right now, an introspection going on in Germany, in France, in Italy, and certainly within the United States and Great Britain. So this chessboard is what we have to focus on, the future, Peter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the multipolar world that so many of us have yearned for is actually being dropped into our laps, unfortunately, at the great loss of life in Ukraine. It's, Dr. Bish, in Cambridge here, we had in the last news cycle the head of NATO, Stoltenberg. He's saying Russia needs to be defeated because of China. I mean, this has nothing to do with Ukraine. I mean, this is extraordinary. What they're trying to do is reshuffle the chessboard, and they keep losing pieces. And when a hegemon is down on its luck, it lashes out. And that's what I worry a lot about. You know, talking about Taiwan right now, I mean, how many conflicts do they want to get going here? It's extraordinary to me. That's why I said I think we need psychologists now, not historians. Go ahead in Cambridge.
You are absolutely right. Well, one big element as to what's happening right now is actually, and it's really important, is the Arctic front. So one, that's one front which is not being discussed at the moment, but it is at the back of this conflict as well. So this is a conflict between East and West trying to get global, supremacy. Essentially, so, and Ukraine is just a proxy example. So it's just a way to initiate these conflicts and gain power. And in all honesty, I think the world today is in the hands of lunatics.
I completely agree with you. And then you have a president of the United States that's out to lunch. Okay. I mean, Michael, let me go to you. You look like you had a little problem there with your picture, but you're back, and that's good. I have a theory. You've worked in the belly of the beast here. Is it because because Joe Biden is out to lunch that people like Victoria Nuland and Jake Sullivan and Anthony Blinken have so much power? Do you think that's true?
Well, that's the problem. Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, if it weren't for their push and the U.S. push on Europeans, this problem with Ukraine would not be existing today, as far as I'm personally concerned. This would have never have happened. They have an agenda, as you pointed out, to isolate Russia, contain it like a Cold War, and have regime change. That's their ultimate goal. Excuse me. The other problem that I'm seeing here now is that the world has expanded over into a multipolar world, and that's probably for the good. But on the other hand, you're going to see a tremendous change, not only in Europe, but in the United States. This, as I said, this war would never have happened. Now, in recent days, another development to get back into the how do we establish peace in this mess. The African nations now have come together, some seven of them, including Egypt. And the general is personal friends with Egyptian President al-Sisi. They are going to be talking in coming days to Zelensky, to Putin. And while they're hitting the leadership, our job through the Patriots International Alliance, combined, which includes UNIT from Dr. Bish, is to try to get a groundswell of popular support toward a ceasefire, to put pressure on our governments to achieve that goal. It's going to take time.
I'm sorry, Michael, but Tucker Carlson did that and he got silenced, okay? And Fox News is trying to muzzle him. I mean, if you speak up against the war party, they punish you. So I think your endeavor is admirable. I really do, and that's why, you know, we will advertise it on this program and on this channel, but it's an uphill struggle. Let me go back to the general and big fork here. It's patently obvious obvious that the U.S. administration, with the U.K. Shamefully following along, is or leading it, we don't know. But their intent is to keep this war going on as long as possible. They have no intention of ending this thing anytime soon.
Well, the money's going to run out. But again, to focus on this summit conference, Peter, you know, a project like this takes leadership, it takes structure, it takes funding. We want support for this, and we have a location picked out for this summit. But it's very important that sane minds meet sooner rather than later. And that's what we're focused on. We can't depend on the ineptness of these governments that want to continue to purge and try to take Putin out of office and to change the regime in Russia. It's just ludicrous. It's silly. So the chessboard will not show that. But that's why this summit conference, and Peter, I thank you for having us on, so the world knows there are sane minds that are attempting to bring a ceasefire over there and stop the killing.
Well, Dr. Bish, in Cambridge, you know, one of the things I really worry about is that, you know, when I think of, you know, I hear all these conferences about rebuilding Ukraine after the conflict and, you know, getting donors together and all of this. It's very reminiscent of Afghanistan and Iraq, and we all know how that ended up, okay? But what is really troubling is that because their concern really is not Ukraine, I'm not sure much of Ukraine is going to be left when this is all over. And on top of that, if the ending of this conflict, the conflict can end militarily, but politically it may not, and we'll have a revisionist Ukraine full of Nazis supported by NATO, the EU, and the United States. I can't think of a worse outcome than that, because these people will continue a guerrilla warfare, blowing up pipelines, et cetera, et cetera. Because I'm glad that you mentioned what you said earlier, is because this is also a huge political problem. Go ahead.
Yes, it is. And you know, U.S. Or NATO is not interested in seeking any diplomatic resolution to the thing. And it's pretty clear. UN is hopeless. Any international body currently existing is completely hopeless. What we're left with is an actual genuine problem of recognition that there is this Nazi problem. And hence, the best hope is really getting the international community coming together. Good people, not the crazy people on top, the good people who are seriously interested in resolving this, and it has to be done through recognition. So you get these host of entities, and there are very good leaders around, and who are really seriously interested in resolving the matter. They are present in United States, in within NATO countries themselves. So you know, if you get these really genuine guys together, you know. And get the dialogue going of actually recognizing that there is this problem. There has to be a resolution. There has been a resolution for this. You know, history is our teacher. So post World War II, we know how things were resolved. And the biggest element is actually to be able to get the message out to the people. So once you have the support of the people, and the people in the West would not support this. Now, right now, we have a media blackout in the West. So the common person here in Britain, I can tell you, is not aware of the problem. So once they are aware of the problem, I can vouch for it. They would not stand for it. They would really take the government, take the defense department to task, and really ask them for answers. So I think we've got to overcome this media blackout completely. And that can only be done gradually. You can't expect.
Well, you know, we're rapidly running out of time. We have 1 minute left here. I'll give it to Michael. You know, you and I are children of the Cold War. I would imagine the general is, too. It was the other guys that blacked everything out, that blocked everything. But now the West is that. The West is now the land of censorship. I think you find that ironic. So do I. Last 50 seconds go to you, my friend.
Yeah, so much for democracy and that illusion that they try to perpetuate. It doesn't exist, even here. I mean, you have RT blacked out in UK, for example. What nonsense. Throughout Europe, this is not democracy. And the Americans particularly, have no clue on how for eight years Ukraine has been bombing and shelling the eastern part of Ukraine that led to this crisis. They finally asked for help. And that's why Russia had to take some initiative, because it was getting to be too much, especially then when they saw U.S. and NATO pile on coming in 2 weeks after our disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan.
Well, all three of you have convinced me that the end of this conflict will come about when people of goodwill come together, and you certainly all three are. Thank you very much. I want to thank my guests in Big Fork, Reston, and in Cambridge. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.